Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cato, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church. It's in Los Angeles, California, but currently on sabbatical.
And I'm Zach Barris. I live really close to Harvest Record Store in Asheville, North Carolina. And Matt, today is a special edition of the podcast. I didn't tell you this, but we got a guest. Today we have, as a guest on our podcast, someone who I can only describe as survivor of Hurricane Hillary. Matt, how are you living into your new identity as a hurricane survivor?
Yeah, I'm a survivor. I'm not going to give up. We're still here. It's a sunny day today. I don't know how to describe it. We were looking at radars of giant storms headed our way for several days. And then the night before, our neighbors started tarping their roof, which we felt sympathetic because we...
I like that you just use tarping as a verb, as a thing that you just do.
It's a thing. It's just a thing that you do. It's a thing you do.
It's an activity.
Tarping their roof, which is fairly common here in Los Angeles. And then Chris was putting the plants away. She put all the house plants inside. And I worked on a playlist because that was equally important to those two other tasks. So that's how we prepared. And then Sunday it just rained.
The task is in your family. You know, that's how you accomplish things.
Yeah, we just divided up the tasks. So then the next day we continued dividing the tasks. And we knew we were going to spend most of the day inside. I said, you know, I want to get some of this. We picked up some prints and artwork on our travels this summer. So I want to get some of this on the wall, you know? So Chris said, all right, looks like Michael's is open. I'll head out to Michael's. It was only a light drizzle at the time. It was just a light rain. Mm-hmm. I thought, yeah, the storm's not really going to hit for a while. And Michael's apparently had, I was getting reports via text. There were buckets set out in the Michael's to collect the rain coming through the roof. Again, fairly common in Los Angeles. Our roofs are not that strong because we normally don't need to use them for much beyond shade.
The thing that doesn't surprise me about this story, Matt, is that I'm pretty sure Michael's is one of those places that doesn't close because it doesn't require employees to be open.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, you could just wander around. You wander out like nobody works there, right? It's just a...
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, right. It's one of those places. It's an essential business, which is why it has to be open 24/7. So I kept getting these buzzing alerts on my phone. Flood watch, you know, don't go out except in case of emergency. For example, if you need new picture frames to your house, that is clearly an emergency worth going out for. While Chris was out, the rain started coming down much harder and started getting nervous. Hey, maybe you should head home. Yeah, she came home and it just kept raining. Just got a lot of rain. Wasn't much worse than that. Got some winds later in the evening, but otherwise just a lot of rain. I know other places had it a lot worse. I saw pictures from Palm Springs, the Coachella Valley where we were. Mm. They got a year's worth of rain in like 24 hours. It was a lot for them, but we just got some rain. However, the schools didn't know what was going to happen. And so with all the uncertainty, they very defensively decided to cancel school for today. So our children were home and we did an amazing job of parenting, just putting on a Harry Potter book tape. And that set them still for hours.
A book tape, huh?
Book tape. That's
a cassette.
That's how Chris does it. We just call them book tapes, Zach. It's like a mixtape.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
You mix up the chapters and you feed them.
That's right. What's happening?
Oh, well, Matt, I don't know if they're selling the t-shirts down by the gas stations with the really fleecy blankets that say Chivas and Los Angeles Lakers, but you got to get yourself an I Survived Hurricane Hillary t-shirt.
It just seems so surreal. I know that hurricanes are real, but this was just, it just felt like a rainy day is what it
One thing to like. Intellectually know something and another thing to experientially right? know something.
I mean, it was worse in January when it rained nonstop for like 2 weeks straight and you just couldn't get out of the way. this was like 24 hours of rain. Like, I understand why people were nervous. I'm not criticizing the decision makers. Mm-hmm. I think there was a lot of uncertainty. We didn't know what to expect. You got to prepare. I'm fine with all the preparations, but that's my report. It was just rain.
That's my, on this side, Matt, here we go. Look at this. We're going to pivot into things that might be helpful to our real listeners, Matt, besides us improv, doing light improv around hurricanes. A thing you have to do when you're an identified religious leader from time to time is decide if you're going to cancel or not, right? I don't know how often it happens in Southern California, but in Colorado, where I live, we would get the winter weather from time to time, and there was always like, are we going to cancel? We're not going to cancel? You know, when I first went into it, having not lived in that kind of a place before, especially as like a real adult in charge of things, and anticipated that it was going to be a hard line, like, we don't cancel nothing for nobody, ever, right? And you just got to toughen up. And some people did adhere to that, but even the university, they canceled exams one time. Because and it did, it snowed a lot, right? And the last day of exams were canceled. So like students didn't have, they weren't made up because graduation was happening in 2 days or, you know, it wasn't. People were scheduled to graduate at the end of the semester, right? And you couldn't make them come back to take an exam. Just
yeah.
So, I mean, it happened with pandemic-y things, right? Do we cancel? Do we not cancel? Happens with weather things all the time. And I always felt a tinge of guilt of like, oh, I probably shouldn't cancel. Like, definitely don't cancel. Nope, not, never a good idea to cancel. Like, cancel is always the wrong choice. It's something you have to do if you have no other choice, right? But these days, you know, I say cancel. Who cares? They play it safe.
Who cares? Well, that was not the email that I got from my bishop. It did not say who cares. But it was a very interesting email that our beloved Bishop Brenda Boss sent to us. Shout out to Bishop Boss. We should get her on the podcast sometime. She'd be fun.
Quadruple B.
It'd be great. But her email was like, you might wonder whether you should cancel worship. This email went out on like Friday. I can't tell you what to do. That was the extent of the email. Mm. Here are the factors that I might consider. So it was helpful, but really the thesis was, it's up to you. So I look forward to sending a lot of newsletter articles like that. I think I'm just going to pose a question that's on everyone's mind and then not answer the question. Which, what are you going to do? I think that is the correct answer, but then just, I don't know.
I mean, they just always take this like position of, I can't tell you what to do because like they
have. I mean, it's true. I don't disagree.
No. It's not true, Matt. It's not true. Right? I can't tell you what to do and have it be enforced by law. Yes, that's not true, right? Like, that's not how it works. But I can tell you what to do, Matt. I'm not a bishop. Like, you want me to tell you what to do? I'll tell you what to do, right? Like, and I actually think it's I won't get too soapboxy here. I think it's a failure of our leadership structure. That's their default on it, right? Now, understand there's legal CYA because sometimes a local leader needs to lean on that, right? You need to have somebody up the chain that you can lean on, right? I'm the assistant manager of my family, right? And one of the ways that I'm helpful, that I'm able to effectively be the assistant manager of our family unit is that from time to time, I can enforce things because I can be like, hey, I agree with you. This rule that we've got to do, this thing we got to do is not great. The manager said to do it, so we got to do it, right? You know, like, we wonder why, like, clergy get all, like, yeah, burnt out and, like, you have to take shots all over the place. Oh, it's because they're not getting any cover from the leadership.
You just do it all the way up the chain. Love thy neighbor. I know, it's a pain in the ass, but got to do it. It's what it says.
I don't want
to
do it
right
that,
here. I don't want to. It's right here. So
the manager says we got to do it. So coming from corporate. Right? Like, you need a corporate to, like, bring stuff on. Like, you need to have that in your tool bag. And when you don't have it, like, it, you know. Yeah. It is all you. Like, it's you, Pastor. Pastor, you didn't. You had the freedom to make a choice, whatever choice. And I don't like the choice you made.
That's why you meet with your council. And you just, it's a collective decision. It's great.
Things don't need to be. Everything doesn't need to be. Gosh.
But if you need that solution that you're talking about, that's where you get it from. It's usually, I don't know, maybe people have more contentious councils than I have, but
You're just living the dream, Matt.
I wouldn't go that far.
Speaking of the dream, Matt, one of the things we do on this podcast often is talk about the offerings on a little application called formerly HBO Max and now just Max for some reason. And I'm a little late getting on it. You know, obviously, I never got around to it. And it's so in our wheelhouse, Matt. I've started watching HBO's Winning Time with John C. Reilly and Jerry Buss about the founding of the Los Angeles Lakers, which is an apt name today, I believe, as there might be lakes and rain now, finally, in Southern California. And Matt, it's really good. It's really good. I've not seen it so far. I've watched the first two episodes. There's been no basketball, and I've loved it. John C. Reilly is real good in this.
So season two is out, or it's coming out, and you're like getting
prepared? Season two is out, and I'm watching season one.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll take that recommendation.
There's so much going on. Jerry West did not want to draft Magic Johnson, like hated the idea of drafting Magic Johnson. They have this great encounter. This is really good. Into episode two, season one. Red Auerbach and Dr. Buss, Jerry Buss, who went on to own the Lakers. He's buying the Lakers in the first episode. They have this like meeting, and it just sets the stage for like all of the like Boston LA like beef that's going to happen for the next 20 years, 30 years. It's perfect. Pitch perfect.
Fantastic. Well, check it out. That's why people come to this podcast for media recommendations.
And meteorological insights and how they relate to church leadership.
Well, I wonder if we have any storms in the text today. Probably not.
That would be apropos.
But we'll see. We'll see what we got. Talk in text for some Sunday after Pentecost. All I know is the first reading is Isaiah 51. 1-6. Listen to me, you that pursue righteousness, you that seek the Lord. Look to the rock from which you were hewn, and to the quarry from which you were dug. Look to Abraham your father, and to Sarah who bore you. For he was but one when I called him, but I blessed him and made him many. For the Lord will comfort Zion, he will comfort all her waste places, and will make her wilderness like Eden, and her desert like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in her, thanksgiving and the voice of song. Listen to me, my people, and give heed to me, my nation, for a teaching will go out to me, and my justice for a light to the peoples. I will bring near my deliverance swiftly. My salvation has gone out, and my arms will rule the peoples. The coastlands wait for me, and for my arm they hope. Lift up your eyes to the heavens and look at the earth beneath. For the heavens will vanish like smoke, and the earth will wear out like a garment. And those who live on it will die like gnats. But my salvation will be forever, and my deliverance will never be ended. Word of God, word of life.
Thanks be to God. Matt, here is my insight this week. I've always, you've known this, Matt, been into human identity as dust, right? Earth, I've had years of kicks of this, right? Of like, that's who we are. We're just miraculous creatures called up out of the dust who walk around and then return to the dust. Interesting take by Isaiah here. We put a little bit of a twist on it because it stays true to that, but a little bit of a twist because what Isaiah reminds us of is we are not just creatures called up out of the dust, miraculous, because that feels fallible, right? Like falling apart, dust, nothing. Isaiah says, hey, you're a Korg. You are the Marvel character played by Taika Waititi, you are a creature made of stone, because stone comes up out of the ground. It's dust, it's rock, it's dirt, it's the same stuff.
Yeah,
that's one of the options here.
Indeed,
because it turns out dirt is a lot like water, right? Which is a lot like fire. It's like all the elemental stuff, right? As you learned this week, Matt, water good but also bad, dust weak, fallible stuff, also strong, reliable stuff.
Yeah, I didn't know we were getting a Korg reference this week. It's pretty great.
This is where you come for your biblical Korg references.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I like that imagery. I don't have much to say, much more to say on it beyond Korg, but just the quarry from which you were dug. Just, yeah, giving us a new spin on that coming out of the earth image. I like it. I like this theme too, for he was but one when I called him, but I blessed him and made him many. Just, it feels like a, gosh, coming from the, well, it's not even just the unexpected place, but he was but one. You wouldn't expect all that to come from this one person, and yet look what I did. Here we go. God as Maui once again.
How do you feel, Matt? You're basking in the afterglow of your baby Billy's Bible sabbatical, in which you did a lot of family stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like where you came from. And that's a part of that, right? Like there's this whole, I was at a family reunion earlier in the summer, and one of the relatives gave this big speech about how we're all there because these two people fell in love, mm-hmm. and decided to build a life together, however long.
Yeah.
And there's a part of it that I think is like really moving, but it also sometimes gets like that vibe, like starts to get a little cheesier on the edges, you know? And I feel like, oh, is this shit? I don't know how much, like they were like real people who probably like, I don't know them, like they might have sucked, right? Like, we don't know, like how are you feeling about that vibe right now, man? That tension, I suppose.
What's the tension? I use that all the time.
Thanks, Bishop. I think it's the tension between like the comforty that feels really good and deep, you know, but then also like it edges into, I feel some tension with kind of great man history, I guess, is the being wary of that, right? Because the more I know about people in the past, the less I'm like, oh, we got to remember the founding fathers of whatever it is, right?
Yeah. I guess the piece of it that I've found to be, because, yeah, like I have thought about that. I guess the piece of it that I find to be most meaningful is just this feeling of connectedness and interconnectedness rather than like, oh, man, I'm descended from this William Cadell. He must have been a great guy. It was interesting. So I found this plaque to my ancestor, William Cadell, who died in 1728. And, you know, it talks about how he built quite a life for himself. You know, he was very successful.
He has
like
a plaque,
all kind of
300 years
he's
later,
got a
man.
Plaque, right? Like he was very successful. You know, I'm just like, I don't really care. Like, I guess the thing that's good about that is that he was important enough to have a plaque that now I know who he is. Because otherwise, I don't know, maybe it'd just be lost in the dustbin of his, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know if he didn't have this plaque. So that's great. But I don't care how successful he is or not. Like, it's not, but I'm, mm-hmm. but I'm this idea of, I don't know, the piece of it that feels moving is feeling connected. And I think that you get when you trace some of those, do some of that ancestry work, some of that genealogical work, like you sort of know and like that you're connected with other humans. And yet you get mm-hmm. to, you see it in this, you see it more clearly. You kind of sweep away some of that dust and you see it a little bit more clearly. And I think that, I mean,
you can see clearly now.
Yeah. Cause the rain is gone. so I think the tension for me is, the blood relatedness versus the beloved community and what's like, Is there a deeper meaning to one or the other of those? Like, what is the, who cares if we're, these people are blood related or not? Like, is that mm-hmm. really that important? But I think there's some kind of connective tissue there between like seeing how interconnected you can be within this family tree, and then how that could shed light on ways that we are interconnected in other ways, in other communities. So I guess for me, it's the interconnectedness, right? Which is more of a horizontal connection than it is a vertical great man connection. Mm-hmm. How are we connected to other humans? And maybe it starts here with Abraham and Sarah. But it's really trying to shed light on a deeper kind of like connectedness that we have. I don't know if that makes any sense, but you asked me to reflect, so there it is.
I can't tell you what to do. Just a cop out. I appreciate that when I did my genealogical stuff, I got to discover that one of my, that I'm a nearly a direct descendant of a really terrible person, of many terrible people, probably, right? But a specific particularly terrible person, right? In that my 11 times great grandfather, his brother, was Samuel Parris, Reverend, in Salem, Massachusetts, where he is a principal character in The Crucible, notable for the witch burning and stuff. So that's one of my ways, like, to get out of jail free of, like, that's us. We burn witches, which is a joke and funny, but also, like, we're not deifying the past in that, you know? Like, that's helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for wearing it on your sleeve. This episode is sponsored by the National Association of Witch Burners. Scapegoating is an important generating mechanism that helps our society work, and we're here to help. Check out local resources for witch burners in your area at the National Witch Burners Association.biz.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I think, Zach, that sometimes that is something that scripture will deal with, right? Sometimes we get these, mm-hmm. these singular passages that are a little hagiographical. But in other places, like David's not a great guy. We're going to show him warts and all. And here's Jacob, not doing super cool stuff. And Abraham too, and some of these stories. I mean, oh my gosh. So we don't get all those stories in this one passage, but I think scripture itself contains those multitudes and isn't afraid to show them. And I guess to pull us back full circle, I feel like that maybe is one of the things that this tries to get at, right? Where like, he was but one when I called him, but I blessed him and made him many. Now that can sound really like, well, he's just one guy, but it's also like, well, he was kind of a jerk. We don't necessarily know that when God discovers Abraham, but he's human with all of his fallibility. And yet, look what I could do with this one human. So maybe some of the seeds of addressing those things or wrestling with them are in here.
Speaking of this, Matt, I'm sure during the hurricane, you consumed all the pop culture you missed, but season 2 of Good Omens, which plays with these same sorts of ideas, with a not particularly good angel and a too good demon, plays with the ideas. It was really good. It's out right now. You should check it out. Pared down budget so they don't do as much crazy stuff, but they just focus on the good stuff, which is David Tennant and Martin. What's his name?
I don't know, but he's really good.
Yeah, they're in a room together talking fast at each other. With really clever things, but it's post the book, right? So they're off book, so you don't know what's going to happen. They're just making it up. Pretty good. Check it out.
Wow,
that's on the Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I remember the first season. Good yeah. stuff. I'll check it out. David Tennant and Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen. I was going to say Martin Sheen. Sheen. That's what. Well, Matt, here's the good thing about the podcast. I get to set up that conversation knowing it's coming next. So there might be a connection or two if I did my job well. We're getting pretty deep into Matthew here, 16th chapter. When Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." And he said to them, "But who do you say that?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah. Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter." And it doesn't give you the parenthetical, which in Greek means rock. "And on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. And then he sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah, because the writers were confused and thought they were in the Gospel of Mark, for the Messianic secret's a big deal. But we're not. We're still in Matthew. This is the good news of Jesus.
Praise to you, Christ.
So, Matt, it seems perfectly hagiographic, right? Hagiographic. All about how great Peter is. Peter's the rock. He's going to roll my blues away. He's got the keys to the kingdom. He is a great guy. I don't think we read this story enough. We should read it during Holy Week, right? Like when we get Peter denying Jesus, we get roosters crowing. And after all that happens, we should go right into this story. Because it's, I think that if we framed it that way, it would give us, raise a lot of questions, a lot more questions around, like, this is the foundation you're going with? Like, this is the, I mean, that might be a rock, but it's not, this guy's not the rock, is he? Like, you, as someone professionally involved in the civil engineering industry, Matt, I can tell you foundations are important. And I'm not sure this is the stuff we want to be putting down first.
Yeah, indeed. As someone who may or may not have foundation issues with this house, I can affirm foundations. Pretty important.
You got that old Peter foundation, huh?
Yes. Yeah. No, you're so right, Zach, as usual.
Oh, jeez. That's
what... Yeah, this quote from Matthew was actually on. So I grew up at St. Peter Lutheran Church in school, which I attended from preschool all the way up to eighth grade. And I kept going to church there through high school. But it was St. Peter, and there was a giant rock outside the church near the sidewalk.
Dwayne
Johnson. Yeah, it was a statue of Dwayne Johnson. And no, it's just a rock with a plaque on it. I love a good plaque. Mm. And the plaque had...
This is the second plaque you've dropped, man. Plaque-filled life.
The plaque had this verse: on this rock, I will build my church. It was right here from Matthew 16. On this rock, I will build my church. I passed by that rock every day as I walked home from school. It was just the thing that I could actually do in the place where I grew up, walk home from school. But I never understood that about it. I didn't know. I was like, okay, built the rock on, I don't know.
I guess the church is going to be built in Ireland.
I have no idea what this verse means. but many years later, I was in a New Testament class at Valparaiso University. And Fred Niedner spent, gosh, he must have spent the whole lecture that day just on Peter. But it was so, he told the story in such, it was one of those lectures where he was just, you know, it's kind of like when Ralph Klein would just sit on the desk. And he just started talking. Mm-hmm. So it was, he was doing that kind of thing. You've been teaching that long that, you know, you just kind of sit in the desk and you start talking. And everybody's into it because you know what you're doing. And he just wove this story about Peter and all of Peter's failings. It was like one story after another about all of the ways that Peter had failed and messed up. And then he gets to the crescendo where Jesus says, and on this rock, I'll build my church. And Nina was getting all like teary eyed, just even giving it. Like, it was just, he was preaching it. It was a lecture, but he was preaching. And I think that's it. I mean, like you said, like Peter denies Jesus three times. We have all these, like, he gets it wrong. Get behind me, Satan. He's not, I don't know. He's rocked for a lot of reasons. But then Jesus says, on this F up, I'm going to build my church. Which is a pretty powerful thing to say. So you don't get that unless you read the whole story.
That's one
of those examples where it's tough to just get the lectionary verse, but it's an opportunity for you, preacher, to do that in your sermon.
I'm struck by the where does it come from? The line in the song, the hymn, every stone will be torn from stone. Right, I'm struck by that, right? And maybe not hearing that. Because the joke was always like, or I don't know if it was a joke, I find it funny now. Maybe it was Craig Satterley. It feels like a Craig Satterley thing would say to us, because everybody loved it. Canticle of the Turning, right? It was the seminarian's jam at the time, right? And everybody's just full-throated singing it. And he was always like, well, when you sing that verse about every stone being torn from stone, look around you because that's that church that you're talking about. It's your church. It's going to be torn stone from stone. Heed the warnings.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not an apocalyptic thing, right? Maybe it's that cross-shaped thing of we're going to build on this foundation because this is the foundation we got. Because if we sit around and wait on some better rock to come along,
yeah,
we're going to be here a long time. We're not going to get anything done, right? We got to got to work with what we got. Mm-hmm. What we have is our humans. Like this F up, Peter. I don't know why we're censored all of a sudden, but we are. We're going to keep it kid friendly. So we're going to use these. We're going to use these people, right? We're going to use you, and you're going to mess up. And every stone is going to be torn from stone over and over again, but we're going to keep building and keep using these things. And that's what the rhythm, the pattern of life is.
Amen. I think that'll preach.
Boom.
Which I see the title here is the Gospel According to Korg. And that's what happens to Korg. He's rebuilt. He's just built and rebuilt again, apparently.
Full disclosure, I had to look up the Wikipedia article to remember what that character's name was, and I don't know their storyline at all.
Did you? I never know how caught up you are on Marvel movies. Have you seen Love and Thunder?
Yes.
Okay. See, so you know Korg's latest chapter.
Did I see Love and Thunder? I did watch. I watched Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 recently.
Yeah, that was good.
I have notes. I mean, like,
notes.
He was like 2.5 hours long.
Not long enough.
I mean, everybody loves Rocket, right? So, like, to get the Rocket backstory, I'm into it. Interesting. Good. Mm-hmm. Liked it. It's just that nothing happened.
But nothing happened?
Yeah, nothing really happened.
Oh, that's interesting. We should dive into that at some point. Because this is the discourse in the Marvel, the people that discourse. About Marvel is like the world can't end in every single story, right? Like, how do you keep you got to Endgame? How you can't just keep raising the stakes. And so the thing that some people, not everyone, liked about Guardians 3 was that they were like, well, the stake was their friend's life. It was just their friend. Like, really, like, wasn't really a whole lot more than that. And yet that still felt emotional. It still felt like, oh, like there was actual stakes, but they didn't have to be like the whole universe will end unless we stop this big bad. So, but your take was
I think that story could happen in 90 minutes.
90 minutes. Fair.
Not 150 minutes. Like, fair. It was really, yeah, agree, right? The bears feeling all the feels and stuff, right? It was beautiful. But it was a really long journey for a really simple story, which is fine. Meat and potatoes. We said it on here before. Sometimes you just got to serve up meat and potatoes, and that's fine, right? It's good. You got to have meat and potatoes some days.
The hybrid creatures that were Rocket's friends.
Mm-hmm. That was good.
More disturbing or less disturbing than the Guillermo mixed.
Oh, much less disturbing.
Hybrid creatures.
You are caught up on some stuff. Vampires, baby. The that local pretty, news one was good. They've had some good ones recently.
The local news, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I told Chris, I was like, I think this one they're going to teach history at a community college. She was like, no. I was like, yep. It's great.
I still am not. There's so much mileage I can get out of the concept of energy vampires.
Right? Yeah. It never gets old. Just
like my door is closed, but I don't know how soundproof this new recording studio is. I may or may not have referred to my child as an energy vampire multiple times in texts and lots of different ways to the manager to let them know we're working with an energy vampire. But it works.
It works. It works. And they spent a whole season just on that angle.
So good. Oh, gosh. Wow. There was an episode a couple weeks ago where he was like, his stories became too interesting and he was about to starve to death.
Right, yeah.
He's like, I went on vacation to Vietnam and almost died. He starts telling the story, and it sounds like it's going to be really boring. He's like, no, then all of these really exciting things happened. it was real good.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, what, besides what we're watching, what are we listening to?
So I got an interesting story for you, Matt. I'm sure I've told you before, but I think at some point during seminary, I know this happened, okay? There was Windows to the World, WTTW, the PBS channel in the Chicago metro area, had a live music show called Soundstage, I think is what it was. And it must have been my last year of seminary because the Vinyl Spouse was contesting and won tickets to a taping at Soundstage for an artist called Kate Nash, who was really big at the time. We were there. I was there. I swear to sweet baby Jesus, I was at that show. I saw Kate Nash perform at Soundstage. That episode has never aired. We kept waiting and waiting. Years later, I'd look on the Wikipedia, look up the episode listing. There's no Kate Nash episode. Today, I looked again. It's been 15 years later, 13 years later, and there's Kate Nash at Soundstage, but you have to like rent it from YouTube. So I don't know. Maybe I'll check it out to see if that's the show. But I swear I went to it. She's got a song called Foundation. It's really good, really catchy. It was a big hit back then. She's British. The thing that's going to flip your mind here, Matt, there's lots of different stories here. Kate Nash went on to do acting and was an important character in, oh gosh, what was the name of the show? The wrestling show on Netflix with Marc Maron.
Oh, yeah.
What's it called?
I can't remember, but I know what you're talking about. Yep.
Yeah. She was the redheaded, I think she's Australian on the show. That's Kate Nash. And she had she's had a successful acting career. Recently, she started putting out some more music recently. There was some icky music industry stuff back in the day. But check it out. It's an excellent song. It's really fun. It's called Foundations. It's not about a great foundation, but neither is this. So check it out. Spin some Kate Nash. Remember a show that never happened or did it back in the late aughts. Then, Matt, you know, this text reminds us all of the Bones, the Maren Morris song. And so I was like, wow, is there a great cover of that? I started going down a rabbit hole. And what I found instead is a pretty interesting song, new to me. And it's actually Maren Morris covering somebody else with Mr. Mumford himself, Marcus Mumford, a track called Look at Us Now. So check that out. It's about identity. Who are we? What's going on? Because there's some who are we from identity questions, right? Jesus says, who do you say that I am? Identity, all in these texts. So preach on identity this week. And finally, Matt, a song I can't get out of my head. I think we saw Doechii. Did we see Doechii at Coachella?
Yeah.
Oh, man. What it is, huh? What's up? The hook is so hooky. It's so good. You know, every black boy needs a little love. Every good girl needs a thug. And that's kind of what Isaiah is saying. Right, it's going to be good is another thread that we didn't really touch on much, but it's there, and you should be spinning that Doechii. She's got a new single dropped. I haven't listened to it, but new single dropped this week. You can check it out too. But gosh, the hook is so hooky; it's been in my brain.
Beautiful Coachella, still introducing us to new artists,
right? Even after the fact.
Well, what have I got here? Jesus asking all these questions that sound like riddles has me thinking of the Riddle Song by Doc Watson, which I don't even want to give it away. I just want to tell you to listen to go listen to
what
it.
What is he a doctor of?
I don't. Amazing music. Ugh.
Same thing with Jerry Buss. What is he a doctor?
The Riddle Song sets up these questions in the first verse, and then just lays waste to your heart in the second verse. So good. The Riddle Song. And then Soyo, Bomba Estéreo, thinking about identity. I'll throw that one on there. And then another white guy with the guitar, Johnny Cash, with Flesh and Blood. Now, Flesh and Blood may not have revealed these things to Peter, as Jesus says, but it does seem like Flesh and Blood is the thing on which God is going to build God's church, all that imperfect flesh and blood. So God says to us, Flesh and Blood, He's Flesh and Blood, and you're the one I need. That's what I got.
Got a couple notes here from producer Nick. Dr. Jerry Buss the age of 24 in 1957, Matt earned a PhD from the University of Southern California in physical chemistry. Physical chemistry. All Not right. what I thought I was going to find when I started down that rabbit hole.
Interesting.
I thought he might be like a fight doctor. You know, like there's a sideline reporter for like ABC, Dr. Jack. Yeah, Dr. Jackaroo. And you're always like, oh, he's a doctor. No, he's like a cut doctor. Like, just sews people up at boxing matches. He used to sew people up at boxing matches. Different thing.
Well, good luck, preachers. It's been real.
Real vinyl.